and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back for this Wednesday episode. And I hope you're doing good.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty all right.
Good. Well, I was talking to the listener, but yeah, I guess you're doing fine, well, too. That's fun. Don't talk about Dune?
Sure.
All right, cool. We are talking about minute 22 through 23 today.
Pain and sorrow.
Pain and sorrow. That is what awaits Reverend Mothers.
Yeah.
Centuries of pain and sorrow. And then Paul asks,
in all of his teenage wisdom,
is it dangerous?
It's lethal for men, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Paul, you're simultaneously very smart, but also fucking dumb.
Yes.
Context clues, Paul. If your mom is talking about receiving centuries of pain and sorrow, you think it's a good thing?
Yes. Safe to say it is a little dangerous. And I love that line. It's lethal for men, that's for sure. What a Chekhov's gun type statement, you know, that for sure will have no consequence for later in the movie.
Why would it?
So the group finishes getting their still suits together and they head out of the siege. We don't know really how much time passes in between them leaving and getting to the next place that they are going, because we immediately cut over to a smaller rock outcropping. I didn't really know what to call this. Just another like hill, I guess, around.
It's kind of a mound.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got a bunch of holes cut in it, though.
It does.
Whether from the wind or, you know, made by hands, it is somewhere that has clearly been occupied.
A little bit of column A, column B, I would say.
Sure, sure. And Paul's just staring at it. Staring at one of the cave entrances, and we slowly zoom up to that entrance and then cut inside. This place looks cramped as fuck, dude.
Yeah. It's very tight. This
not in
cavern,
a good way.
No. This cavern is about the height of an adult sitting up, crisscross applesauce style. Or if you're Jessica, sitting on your knees, with maybe a few inches of space above you. And what I love is that in Art and Soul of Dune, there is a behind-the-scenes photo of the camera crew shooting this scene. And I'm showing this to Zach so he can see it, and I wish I could show it to the rest of you. But there are just these big dudes with all this camera equipment just, like, hunched over. And Denis Villeneuve in the corner is, like, laying on his back holding an iPad, but, like, a
monitor
in his lap with his knees, like, bent up in a, like, triangle shape. So it's really funny watching all of them. Like, the crew is just as uncomfortable in this scene as the actors and actresses are.
Well, good. That's some shells appreciated. But this is a set they built.
Yeah, it was a set they built in Budapest. Mm-hmm. However, before we talk about more about the interior stuff, I want to talk about the outside.
Yeah.
We talked in Dune Part 1 about how a lot of the shots were split between Jordan and the UAE. Mm-hmm. The outside exterior shots of this was shot in a place called Debet Hanout, D-A-B-E-T-H-A-N-U-T, in Jordan. And looking at the shots that they have here, it is very natural carvings and stuff, with the exception of what we see where Paul is staring down this little cave entrance in the side of this mountain.
Okay.
We have a moment where the camera's zooming in on Paul, and then it's zooming in on the cave, and then we cut to the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this very tight, very cramped space.
Yeah.
Where we see a very old woman being raised up from a sitting position.
Yeah. And she's like kind of rocking back and forth, praying.
Mm-hmm. She's opposite Jessica and Stilgar, who are sitting across, essentially across this light bar from them. And while we're here, there's a picture in Art and Soul of Dune talking about, you know, the space that they constructed, and we can see just how tight it is because there's also this group of the camera operators and Denis Villeneuve and all of them just like kind of crouched in this space as well. So everyone's uncomfortable. And we're not introduced to who this character is directly in the movie, but you and I know who this is. This is Reverend Mother Romolo.
Reverend Mother Romolo. Yep.
Who, like a lot of things for this movie, unfortunately gets kind of relegated to a non-speaking role.
Yes. Although her part in the book is not super expansive.
It's not super expansive, but I would say it's about as important as Hera's.
Sure, sure.
In terms of...
Well, yeah. I mean, Hera gave the exposition for Paul and the siege, and Romolo is giving exposition for what Jessica's about to go through.
Right. But Romolo specifically in the book at least says, look, I'm too old for this.
Right.
It is my time. Stilgar did that speaking for her in the prior scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talking about how their Reverend Mother was dying.
Yes.
Small detail.
Mm-hmm.
But
we're still getting all the information just from different areas.
Yeah.
Reverend Mother Romolo is played by Gwesi Merli.
Yep.
An Italian actress who has done mostly Italian films. Going back to the earliest credit that I could find was back to 2006.
Well, she was born in 1943.
Yes. and I gotta say, man, she looks frightening in this first scene.
I didn't want to say that, but yeah, she's like...
Well, it's weird, but I think
your stereotypical old crone.
Yes.
Kind of look, and that's what she and is.
That is how they described her in the book, as an old crone.
Yeah.
It's weird then, but I'm talking specifically the first time that we see her. She looks terrifying there. She looks better later. Like there's like more color to her skin, and I guess the lighting is better or more favorable. But for this first shot that we see the Reverend Mother, she looks like the Crypt Keeper. she lifts her head and opens her eyes, and it's
cataracts for days.
Yeah, baby. It's like at once like the milky white of cataracts, but also the blue is still in there.
Yep.
So you get to see just like a really pale blue.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's disconcerting given the fact that we've really just been in around the very vibrant blue eyes.
The super bright. Like going back to the scene where Stilgar and all and PB&J and everyone enter Siege Tabor for the first time, and we see that large group, and it's just blue eyes like crazy. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so from Art and Soul, from above, a skylight illuminated actress, Juicy Merli's face, aged by makeup to make her look as though she had lived past 200 years.
There's them geriatric properties.
Yeah. I mean, Spice does that.
Yep.
This interior cavern scene was shot in Budapest. And then 3 months later, all of the shots externally were done.
Oh, okay.
So to kind of break down the timeline of shooting schedules.
Fair enough.
But yeah, the space between... they list as 3 feet, 6 inches.
Space between your wicked lies is where you'll find me hiding if I get to go. Space between. Okay, anyways.
God damn it. I'm trying to talk about Dune.
Dave Matthews, little Dave never hurt no one.
Well, unless you're on that boat in Chicago.
yeah. Unless you're those people in Chicago. You know that happened on my birthday?
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Fun fact.
Oh, God.
Okay, back to Dune. So she touches Jessica's face. She reaches up and she touches Jessica's face, partly, I think, out of ritual, partly because she's blind as fuck. And
I do like to, to sidetrack here, but like as they're guiding her hands to touch Jessica's face, we see the like super faded tattoos and stuff on her fingers, and we see them on her chin and on her forehead and everything as well.
Mm-hmm.
Having a lot of tattoos,
Yourself.
Yeah, myself. Not on my face or fingers or anything, but I've seen my fair share of like super faded tattoos on older people and everything. Mm-hmm. And shout out to the makeup department for getting that right.
Seriously. Yeah, it looked
because,
great.
They definitely made sure to get the like proper aging that tattoos get under the skin.
Yeah, like the bleeding and fading and yeah.
Especially hand tattoos because those just fade so fast.
Yeah, your body's like, get it out of here.
It's not so much that, it's just that you're doing everything with your hands.
Oh yeah, I mean, but the reason that tattoos like fade and bleed like that is because they're trying to get absorbed into the body.
Yeah.
I don't have any, but I know about them. So we cut to the outside after this. And Paul is just standing there still looking at the entrance. And he glances over to his right to this little small encampment. And one of the Fremen that's sitting over there is just giving him a absolute eat shit look. Mean mugging for days.
Yep.
And they are sitting in a circle, chatting, sipping on what I presume is spiced coffee, which is disgusting.
I was going to say it's Zach's favorite drink.
It's gross.
Fremen coffee.
No, thank you. And that's what we get to end our minute on, is just them sipping on this gross ass coffee. Ugh. I would love to have some spiced tea like we saw in Dune Prophecy. Would love to have some of that, but miss me with that spit coffee.
There's also a Fremen man to Paul's right that it was that same one that was giving him the big eyes during the meal scene.
Yeah.
The one that we had talked about, played by Joseph Bedelem as well, with the very white beard.
Yeah.
And the very white hair and everything. So there's a mixture of feelings.
Sure.
Between some of the older Fremen that still don't trust Paul, some that see him as the Lisan al Gaib, and then the younger ones that are just like, this is all a waste of fucking time.
We'll get to them tomorrow.
Yes, we will.
The only other thing that I have to say from the books was, well, one, I wanted to highlight, you know, why Jessica is doing this. And we talked about it, in the books, they are getting ready to flee the siege, head down to the southern lands. The Reverend Mother Romalo is old as hell. She's not going to survive another trip. So they do, Stilgar makes a point to mention that while they have had times where they were without a Reverend Mother, this is not a time for that.
Yeah. They need the guidance.
They need the guidance. So Jessica's here. It is an opportune time for her to take the place of Reverend Romala. And Chani is actually stepping up to be a Sayadina in this moment, which is leads into something that I'll add in my book notes tomorrow. But the way that they are portraying Chani is very different in the movie than they portray her in the books. So I'll get to more on that tomorrow.
I think tomorrow is really Chani's first big moment of dialogue in the movie. She has a couple of lines here and there.
Yeah. But yeah. This is really where it starts. The only thing I want to mention right now is that throughout all of this happening where, you know, they're talking about Jessica becoming the Reverend Mother, you know, what that means to the Fremen, what that means to them. Paul is comparing this to the events that he has seen in his prescient visions. They're happening slightly different than they did in his visions, but they're all leading to the same direction. So I believe it was yesterday when you said that he's seen the specifics of what he needs to do.
Well, he saw the path that he needs to take.
True. And he's making a point of pointing out to himself, I guess, that things are different.
Yeah.
They're not the same as he saw them, but they're still leading to the same place.
Yeah.
So it is not a science. It is an art more than anything.
All right.
Cool. Well, that's all I got. Anything else from your end?
Nothing else from Art and Soul. We'll have a little more to talk about later. But as always, we are online. We're available on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com. You can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us that way. And we'll be back tomorrow with another episode.
All right. See you then.
See ya.